Welcome to the home of Blood, Sweat, and Words, a podcast that empowers writers. My name is Joanne Carson. I'm a fiction and nonfiction author, blogger, and podcaster, and I'm trying to make sense of the writing world today. My weekly show is current, relevant, and above all, honest. Join me, and we'll talk it to the bone. That's what Blood, Sweat, and Words is all about. On the home front, I finished my interview with Kevin Tumlinson this week, and it is amazing. He's an award-winning author, blogger, podcaster, and get this, the head of marketing for Draft Digital. But he was generous with his time, charming, and I learned a lot. The episode will air on January 8th. You gotta hear that one. As if that's not enough excitement for me, I'm in the process of scheduling an interview with a representative with Kobo. I'm learning so much. As far as my writing goes, I've been having great fun drafting the first story in a new cozy mystery series. My newsletter followers are helping me with the name of the town. I can't tell you much more than that because I haven't written much yet. Outside my office, the writing world is in a topsy-turvy mess. Amazon is making changes that are rocking the industry. Do I worry? Yes, how can I not? But I focus, or I choose to focus, on things I can control. How can I improve my writing? Which cover will make my story stand out? How can I help my fellow writers? Those are things that I want to focus on. Change is a constant in our industry and in the world today. I need to keep learning and adapting. I need to ride the wave. That's my news. Now to today's episode with the amazing Mary Buckham. Welcome to episode 15 on Blood, Sweat, and Words. Today I'm chatting with Mary Buckham. I first met Mary 7 years ago at a workshop she gave on writing active hooks. You know, those killer openings that make the reader turn the page. She blew my mind. Every sentence she uttered was pure gold. Since then, I have attended several of her workshops. She's a phenomenal speaker on all aspects of writing craft and a gifted writer. She's published several fiction series of the paranormal persuasion in adult and young adult categories and crafted several reference books for writers. She now has a webinar series she'll be talking about for writers as well. And besides all this, she has a large family. I figured if I wanted to know more about multiple stream incomes for writers, she's someone I should speak to. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Joanne.
So when you, I hear this term, multiple streams of income for writers all the time. Tell me what it means to you.
What it means is not putting all your eggs in one basket. Again, so many of us as writers, particularly when we're starting out, we start thinking in terms of getting a book published. And that's the goal, and it becomes almost a tunnel vision of what we should be doing and where we should be spending our time. And if that's what we want, that's wonderful. But to make a career out of writing, there's all sorts of opportunities out there. And particularly for those writers who need a lot of stimulation or want to explore and try new things and challenge themselves, multiple streams of income is a way to shift from being a store with one product and being a store with multiple products.
That sounds exciting, and I'm certainly trying it myself. And I started off with that tunnel vision, so I hear what you're saying. At first, just getting that book done is everything, and then it's not enough. And how many streams do you have?
It's kind of like asking how many children I have.
Oh, dear.
You know how many children you have when you walk into a restaurant and they immediately set you into banquet seating. But the streams that I'm currently working on are, I write both fiction and nonfiction. And they are radically different. Yes, they are both books, but they are totally different markets. They're totally different sides of the brain used to create them. So there's those two streams. I also do the live webinars, anywhere from a 90-minute once-a-month program to 6-week programs online. And then I have an evergreen program, which is where people can access the craft and information when they're ready, when they need it, and as many times as they need it. And the last stream I would call my live events. I used to do a lot of traveling. And those, again, that's a totally different stream of income that is separate from the others, but they're all interrelated. So did that confuse you? I don't know how
to... No, it made sense. I'm just trying to imagine what your day looks like. You've got all these interesting, exciting, creative projects going on at once. Do you block time, or how do you... That's a lot to do.
I learned to pivot well. this is where having a number of children can be extremely valuable in time management techniques and learning how to be flexible. So as I tell people, I rent my children out at all times except during tax time when I keep them close for the benefits of them. But I think that's one of the things that is invaluable for writers is to learn to be flexible. Learn to, hey, you know, this part of the market is being impacted by X over here that's out of my control. So how do I bring things back? What can I control? And one of the things that I think that we definitely all of us can control is how we look at a writing career, how we approach challenges. And that to me is, I always call the term writerpreneur as opposed to entrepreneur. And to be in the business of writing is different than being in the creative element of it. And so much of our focus is on the creative element that we forget that, wow, this is, how do you make this do more? Work less, do more.
And do you enjoy this? Do you enjoy the broader aspects of it?
Absolutely. when I was starting out, before I was published, I started writing in articles. And articles taught me a very powerful tool. And that tool was the tool of a slant. And a slant is, who is the market for this product? So once you understand about a slant, you can look at for example, a article, and the topic is, let's say, lighthouses. Well, lighthouses could be one type of article for one market, but it also could be a different article for a totally different market or a third market. So then when you're going to do your research for the lighthouse, you are looking at three different articles, which are three different streams of income coming in. And by learning that in writing articles, you can also learn to do it with our books. And there are some authors who understand this intrinsically. Others of us have to beat our heads against the wall to figure it out one step at a time. And that aspect is, you write a book, but it doesn't stop there. How do you enhance that book? Can you make a workbook? Can you do a webinar with it? Can you do a speaking gigs because of it? Can you make it into a coloring book? Can you make it into a group of prompts? There's all sorts of ways to take the same time and focus that we're putting into one thing. It can be slanted in multiple directions. And the sooner we have an opportunity to learn that, particularly if you like to have a lot of things going or you're okay with challenging, juggling, then it works out very, very well for writers.
It's exciting too. I'm finding the podcasting, in addition to writing, it just gets me more stoked up. I've got all these things going on. But do you have one true passion? Like, is your true passion writing fiction, or is it in the middle of all of that?
I think it is in the middle of all of that. And my first passion was writing fiction, because I came from a multi-generational storytelling family. Mm-hmm. We always told stories. We called them fibs, but we always told stories. However, my most immediate family growing up was a visual family. They were visual artists. They all did amazing with their hands. They did metal sculpture and enamels on copper and painting, oil painting, watercolor, all that. So I was the kid that had no talent because I couldn't draw a stick figure to save my life. So I never knew I was creative. I never knew that writing could do more than write your siblings' resumes. So it took me a long time to come to that realization that the power of writing and the opportunity for writing. And so in many ways, the challenge of learning to be a writer actually set me up for seeing it in a different light.
Wow, that's an amazing story. When did you start writing?
I did not start writing until I think 4 or 5 of the kids were born. It was actually my husband who was an artist, again, a visual artist. He initially worked in paintings, charcoal drawings, printmaking, and then he morphed into working with stone. And he was the one who recognized this in me. But I'd always had this message that I was not creative. Mm-hmm. So he had to, you know, like a lot of writers, we have a tendency to take a lot of different jobs because we need that kind of look around the next corner. Mm-hmm. And that's what I did. And I usually took jobs in careers that were challenging to me, such as international banking, because it was all numbers and it was all very linear thinking. It was work. Yeah. Because it did not come naturally. Mm-hmm. Naturally came the stories. Yeah. So it was very interesting. And it was him that actually, when I walked away from a job managing, I think the second largest credit card company, in the business credit card company in the U.S. at that time, he was the one that said, you know what, you can write.
Oh, my goodness.
You can write stories. You can have fun with the process. But of course, again, being a writer and having certain messages growing up, it took a while for me to accept that that was a gift and a talent at the same time.
Oh, my goodness. You're so good. It's hard to imagine that you had you weren't aware of it sooner.
Well, I was aware, but it was a negative. So, again, many writers get the message, stop daydreaming, stop making things up, stop embellishing, stop, I'm glad you can write because you can do this for me, as opposed to there is a need, more than a place, a need for story makers in our society at all times, and that is something to be valued. I think in my next life, I'm going to be born in Ireland, where I actually appreciate that gift right up front.
Yeah, it's so important. We need stories, especially today.
Yes.
So, but back to the multiple streams, mm-hmm. At what point do you think writers should be looking at it? Right away or?
I would tuck it in the back of their thought process. Getting published is a worthy goal, and it takes a lot of focus, and it takes a lot of breaking through mental barriers, but also other barriers in order to get out there. So don't worry about the multiple streams until the writing becomes something that you don't even think about it anymore. Understanding the structure of story, understanding the elements of what a story is involved, understanding your readership, all of that is its own business. But if it ever becomes one of the things that traditional publishing did, and that was both a wonderful thing and not so wonderful, is if you were a author who came up through traditional publishing, mm-hmm. If you sold a unicorn Western story, then you were kind of put into a category. You are a unicorn Western author. Mm-hmm. And they kept you there to build your readership because readers associated you with this particular type of genre and subgenre. Mm-hmm. But for writers, after writing unicorn Westerns after a while, many times they want to break out into a different genre or subgenre. It would be like if Agatha Christie stopped wanting to write mysteries and she wanted to write, well, she did write some romances, but not very many. If she wanted to write sci-fi fantasy, mm-hmm. her publishers would have had a conniption fit because that's not what her readers expected. And so as a creative, we need that a lot of times, that kind of new stimulation, that new challenge, that new road to run down and look around the corner.
It's so much and fun, yeah.
It is. And but at the same time, doing that, there are pitfalls, mm-hmm. which means if your readers have gotten used to these type of books from you, some might transfer over, but some definitely will not. And so you are always then rebuilding your business. So it's the difference between having a strip mall and you have one store with five products in it versus five mini stores. And each of those stores have one product in it. So when you're trying to feed your creative soul by being able to explore a lot of different genres, a lot of different types of stories, you are making it harder to sell this product that those readers are used to receiving from you. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. But it's so frustrating because feeding the creative soul for me is really important. And I do like to try, you know, the different flavors.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what actually can keep a lot of writers writing. Because after you've done 27 unicorn Westerns and you've got these characters down that you're not excited to find out what they're going to do because you have a sense of what they're going to do. They are, you know, like your relatives at the holidays. You know who's going to do what, and it limits it.
Yeah,
you stop having the excitement, the passion.
Yeah.
And when, as a writer, the passion starts waning, that's when I think it is a key to pull out these ideas that you had, not just about other genres, but about other ways to re-engage the excitement in the business of writing and multiple streams of income.
Do you have any tips about, well, I guess you've said it, that to just explore how the different slants you can take on what you're creating. And that goes into your multiple stream ideas?
It does, but it also, again, it is like with newer writers, we focus on learning the craft, which, thank heavens, because it's needed. If you don't understand the craft, if you don't understand what is involved in creating a story so that somebody else who doesn't know and love you can pick that up and enjoy it, that's vital. But once you've got that down, look at many, many times, it's not until a writer reaches their first book being published that they even look at the business of writing, the business of marketing, the business of how do you get that book out into the world in a way that other people know where to find it. And once you get that piece down, or down enough that you can look the other way, then you look at what else can you do. If you are seeking for more excitement, more passion in what the world of writing, can you, again, a lot of writers are taught, you teach in order to promote your book. And that's not a bad thing. But if you don't enjoy teaching, if it doesn't fuel you, if it doesn't feed you in a sense of sharing what you've learned by trial and error to make it easier for somebody else, then don't teach. Find some other way to make sure. And if you try something, coloring books with those unicorns, you may find a whole different market. But if it doesn't you have to try it first to find out, does this really get me stoked? Do I really enjoy this? Do I come back energized from it? And if you do, then you know that that's a good income stream for you.
And it's important to try, like, and not be afraid of trying and failing, because that's what life's about, right?
Well, and that's that term failing makes it sound like it's an either or. Failing, mm-hmm. if you know, trying and learning makes it much more palatable.
Yes, I like that better too. Trying and learning.
So it's kind of like when we're all told about rejections. Now, if you are going through traditional publishing, rejections are part of the process, and that's all they are. And so I remember Susan Wiggs, I believe, very early in my career, gave a speech about the wallpaper that she could have made from her rejections. But she said that each of us have a number on top of our head, and that number basically says how many rejections do we have to receive before we get the yes. And she said that the challenge is we don't know what that number is. For one person, it might be 9. For somebody else, it might be 98. Alex Haley had 98 rejections.
Oh my goodness.
As a published author before he got somebody to buy into Roots, that series that basically changed a whole era. So if we stop one before that number, the world is a lesser place because of it.
Yes.
And so to me, it is one of those things we attach words, ironic because we are wordsmiths, and yet the words that we attach to the process oftentimes are very daunting. They can scare us. They can keep us locked into not trying, or not trying again, or not trying harder, or not trying a different way around the obstacle.
Wow. I agree. Absolutely. I'm still taking that in. I mean, that's just so important. If you stop that one step sooner.
Right. And we never know.
We don't know.
I remember one day walking down, I'd received a devastating rejection letter that basically said you should never write, you can't even write a grocery list, blah, 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 blah. And I was walking in the woods, and I come to the conclusion, it was like, okay, that's it. I am done. I am done, 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 done. I am putting this away. I'm getting on with the rest of my life. And I walked about another 10 steps and thought, but what if he did this at that scene and then she had to do this because, and it was like, I couldn't turn it off. And that, you know that you have to keep going.
Yeah, it's just an inner drive. Thank goodness you did keep going. So what are you currently working on?
Well, currently what I am working on, I have a series of fiction books in urban fantasy, and I have a series of fiction books in young adult, and I co-authoring that with the amazing New York Times author Diana Love, and we're looking at adding more to that particular. We have 3 books in that series. And we're looking at adding more to that particular series. I am also working on, I have the monthly webinars. And the monthly webinars are 90 minutes. I try to keep it down to 90 minutes. Talking about an aspect of writing. And sometimes the aspect is craft element. Last month and this month, we're talking about sex on the page and how to write sexual tension. But sometimes it is a business aspect, such as branding or platform building or analyzing which social media approach works best for a particular author and why. So those happen once a month. And then I have a 6-week program currently on plotting. And plotting, again, is one of those negative 4-letter words that really hold back a lot of writers, because we often start seat of our pants and just want to fly into the wind and have fun. And that's exciting, but I have a pragmatic side that say, I want to do something I want to understand what the reader needs. I want to understand the structure of story and why it matters. And so I teach that for 6 weeks. And again, a 90-minute lecture one day a week for 6 weeks and a 60-minute question and answer session. And so that's going on right now. And I will be doing a similar type of course come January on body language for writers. Okay. And that is because most of our communication in real life is via body language, particularly if we're women. We're reading body language constantly. Mm-hmm. But we forget to put it on the page. So I'm breaking that down into a lot of different elements that will be over a 6-week course. And then that'll be in early in the year, January, February, and then come May in the spring, I will have the Hooks course that again currently is in book format. It is in a evergreen webinar, but a live webinar that goes over different hooks, 2 hooks a week for 6 weeks, so that people have a chance to really dig in and understand that power of hooks and what a difference it can make in somebody's writing. But it's wallpaper. You have to understand the structure of story and these bigger picture things. But when you get to hooks, many, many times, it's that difference between a story that is good and a story that is, I can't put this down. And so that will be coming, another 6-week course in the spring.
And what I love about when you speak about these things is that you really do break it down into language that I can understand, because it's not just by chance that a writer comes up with a good hook. There's a lot of thought put into it, and you make that really clear.
Well, that's what, to me, I had to go dig these things. We use the word hooks in writing in so many ways. You know, the story hook, you know, what is the premise of the story? And we think of hook as a one thing. You open the book and the concept hooks you, or you want to find out what's going to happen at the end of the story. And then we leave it there. Mm-hmm. And we don't realize that hooks are something that literally can make or break a story. And we're talking scenes, chapters, carrying us forward, keeping us engaged. And it is the difference between that book that you pick up right before you go to bed, where most readers are reading now. They usually give an hour or so before they go to bed. They're tired, but they have to get this little fix. And you keep reading because you can't set that book down. And that person understands hooks. And I wanted to understand how they did it, why they did it. What if they didn't do it? If you took that same description and left the hooks out, would it have been as compelling a story?
And you've done a beautiful job of pulling it apart and making it accessible. Going back to your first webinars, the 90-minute live ones, do people have to pay for those?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
And I offer, you can buy them one webinar at a time. You can buy them for less money if you buy a package of 6 of them. You actually get, you pay for 5 and you get 6th one free and a 7th one, a motivation webinar, in that package. So you get 7 for the price of 5. And then I have a program that I call the Mastery Program. And the Mastery Program is something that many, many times, again, when I was starting out, you would have to travel someplace to go to a conference, a full-day conference. Mm-hmm. And that conference would kind of keep you stoked for me, it was about 6 months. I would use the buzz and the energy off of that conference for 6 months. But very often you go back into your everyday world and the dishes are there and the errands are there and the day job is there and everything else is pulling at you. So the Mastery Program is something that I created so that you get for 1 year for a set fee, which is almost less than a nice dinner out, you get the webinar of the month, whatever that one is. You also get access to everything else I have online, and you get access to at least 1 6-week course on the plotting, and you get 2 hours of one-on-one time talking with me.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Well, it was, again, we learn from people who have gone down the path that are further down the path from us. So having access to someone who can say, hey, you know, talk to you about your story, or talk to you about a particular craft element that you are just, point of view really stumped me for a long, long time. Talk to someone about what's platform building, or how does this bio sound, or how can I make it a stronger part of my branding image? Just having that. So having 2 hours, either you use them in one session or you use them in 45-minute increments throughout the year. But it is just one more way to help other writers. The more writers can become stronger writers, the more readers can trust writers.
And it's very accessible this way, as opposed to having to pay and take a plane somewhere. They can engage with the webinars at any time.
Exactly. And they have that all year long. So they can pace themselves. They also have those evergreen courses. So let's say you started the mastery program in September of this year. You have all 12 courses that were given last year that are accessible to you as many times as you want them. And it's a way to be taught, but also to be engaged. Because in the evergreen courses, you learn the information and you can go back and you can do it in small increments. So it's like, oh, let me take notes here, or I can only do it for 20 minutes there on my lunch break. But in the live webinars, you have a chance to say, hey, Mary, I've been thinking about this. What about that? Right. And many, many times in the live webinars, they all have handouts, so you walk away with something in your hands to help remind you. But you also have many times homework, because at least I found myself personally that I thought I was doing what they said, the instructor said, mm-hmm. and then I wrote it and it wasn't quite. So I needed eyes on the page to help me see what I was still missing, or help me see where I might be overwriting.
So engaging a whole nother element of learning by actually doing it as well.
To me, that's when I go into any kind of job or have been, I want to learn by doing. Mm-hmm. Hearing is one thing, but doing puts it on in my words, and seeing how it works with my story is, to me, invaluable. And that's why a lot of what the way I teach is to encourage writers to start applying as soon as possible to their stories in ways that they can make it work. It's not about telling you about my stories. It's about how do you make this work for you?
Yeah. Excellent. Because I can talk theory till the day's end, but I can't necessarily do it. You have to be doing it. So where can the listeners find the information about these courses?
My website is Mary Buckham, BUCKHAM, on writing. So if you just put that in your Google search thing, it says Mary Buckham on writing. And one of them goes to the Facebook page, but one of it goes to the actual website that is focused on the different options that I currently have. And I think right now the classes are lined up through, I think, February or March that are on there. And I'll be getting up the next April, May, and June's shortly. So you can kind of see what kind of monthly classes are coming up. But you can also see the list of classes that are already available to you. They're also available on, there's a venue called Teachable.
Teachable.
Mm-hmm. And this is where a lot of, you can go there and find all sorts of courses and everything from, you know, how to put on makeup to how to do a scrapbook. But on Teachable, you can also look for Mary Buckham, and you'll see a number of the courses that I have on there.
And your books, they can find those on marybuckham.com or or is it all on the onwriting.com?
Both.
Oh, perfect. do you have a final word?
Final word. Basically, it is the best of times to be a writer. There are so many opportunities. Look at those opportunities. Look at the ability to do anything you want in the world of writing. There will be challenges, but that's all they are. It's just challenges in order to hone your skills and your ability. And by diversifying what you're offering your readers, whether it's knitted booties or...
For the unicorns.
Yes, exactly. For the unicorns. It keeps you writing. And that's the most important thing. Because the stories that each of us have are the stories that only we can tell. And if we don't find a way to get those stories into readers' hands, the world is a lesser place. So finding ways, finding they're out there, there's opportunities, just expect them and keep looking for them, and you'll do great.
Well, I can't thank you enough for this, Mary. It's been an absolute delight to talk to you. I hope I can get you to talk with me again another day. It's been wonderful. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm just honored to be included in your podcast and really appreciate it.
Please tune in next week for my interview with New York Times and USA Today bestselling author Mimi Barber. We're going to be talking about the power of working in a writer's group. She created Authors Billboard, and this group of writers work together. They create book sets. They promote together. They write together. They have a heck of a lot of good times together, and they make money. So we'll be talking to her next week. Thanks for listening. Now it's your turn. What do you think about today's episode? I'd love to hear from you. You can leave comments on my podcast website, bloodsweatandwords.com, or email me directly at bloodsweatandwords@gmail.com. Your input is valuable to me. It helps me create a better show. Want to support the podcast? For less than the cost of a cup of coffee a month, you can support it and make a big difference. And there's something in it for you. Check out my page on Patreon. Now, for today's quote, I go to Ursula Le Guin. The unread story is not a story. It is little black marks on wood pulp. The reader reading it makes it live. And a live thing, a story. See you between the lines.